Welcome to the Listening Note-Taking Methods 4 by Academic English UK. Worksheet 3. Practice. Listen to the 5 lectures and take notes using the Cornell Notes system. Lecture 1. Hello. I'm going to talk to you today about Earth's only microgravity laboratory, the International Space Station, the ISS. Orbiting above Earth at 227 nautical miles, the space station is the size of a football pitch, travels at 17,500 miles per hour, and revolves around the Earth every 90 minutes. Taking a period of 10 years and more than 30 expeditions to assemble at a cost of $120 billion, the space station consists of many modules, including 3 decks. The flight deck, the living quarters deck, and the life support deck. 16 laboratories, 8 solar arrays, and 4 docking ports. It was the year 2000 when the first 3 member, 2 Russians and 1 American, crew moved onto the space station. And since then it has been permanently occupied by international teams who stay for 6 months at a time. The main purpose of the ISS is to learn more about working and living in space, in particular the effects of zero gravity on the human body, in order to eventually send astronauts on a deep space mission, so tasks include conducting scientific experiments, exploring planet colonization, and observing the sun and other space objects. The crew work 16-hour days on their set assignments as well as completing other important jobs such as maintaining and cleaning the space station and repairing or replacing equipment. Lecture 2. Hello, I'm going to talk to you today about gene editing. Gene editing refers to the practice of altering the genetic code of an organism either by removing, replacing, or adding segments of its DNA. Currently, most genetic engineering is centered around the prevention and treatment of genetic diseases and disorders in humans, such as sickle cell disease or cystic fibrosis. It is commonly used in livestock too, where it can help to enhance an animal's resistance to disease or reduce a disease's transmission. It relies on CRISPR technology, clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, which can modify both somatic and germ cells. The somatic cells are all the cells in the human body except for the cells that produce sperm and eggs. These are the germ cells. Altering somatic cells is legal as any changes to these cells cannot be passed on to future generations. Controversy arises if changes are made to germline cells. At present, genetic modification of embryos is only legal if for research purposes, not for implantation, such as the 2018 case of Lulu and Nana in China, in which 2 genetically modified babies were created with a resistance to HIV. The debate around germline cell editing also triggers other questions, such as whether we should be allowed to manipulate a person's physical aspects, such as their height or eye colour, or even personality traits, including how intelligent someone is. If this does become legal, it is clear that science, and not nature, will guide the evolution of the human race. Lecture 3. Hello, I'm going to talk to you today about the different COVID-19 vaccines. Since late 2020, several vaccines have been developed, of which approximately 9 have been approved for use around the world. These vaccines fall into 3 main categories: viral vector, nucleic acid, and inactivated. There are also 2 protein vaccines and 1 attenuated vaccine currently undergoing clinical trials, as are 2 more of both the genetic and inactivated ones. The 2 vaccines being administered in the UK at present are the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, which is a viral vector, and the Pfizer BioNTech, which is a nucleic acid or genetic one. The Oxford vaccine combines a harmless version of the common cold virus known as a vector and a small part of the coronavirus's genetic code. Once inserted, the virus's spike protein is produced and is then recognized by the immune system, which acts to fight it off. The subtle difference between this vaccine and the Pfizer one is that the latter injects mini fragments of the coronavirus's genetic material into the patient through the use of mRNA technology. Once the mRNA is in our cells, it makes the body produce spike proteins and later form antibodies and T cells. A bigger difference is the temperature at which the vaccinations are stored. The Oxford vaccine can be stored at regular fridge temperature, whereas Pfizer requires it to be between minus 60 and minus 90 degrees. Lecture 4. Hello, I'm going to talk to you today about endotherms and ectotherms. Most species can be divided into these two groups. Typically, humans, birds, and mammals are known as endothermic species, whereas reptiles, amphibians, most fish, and invertebrates are ectothermic. Endotherms, or warm-blooded animals, generate heat internally, even in cold climates. If the animal loses more heat than is generated, they increase their metabolism in order to raise their body temperature, or, much like a person, they shiver. In the opposite case, where too much heat is generated, panting or perspiring is needed. Because the animal needs to maintain a constant body temperature, they require a large amount of fuel to burn. On the other hand, ectotherms, or cold-blooded animals, generate heat from their surrounding environment. Although ectotherms are able to generate some metabolic heat internally, they are unable to maintain it without the help of the environment. This also means that they do not need as much food as endotherms. There also exist some species that can be both endothermic and ectothermic, such as those that hibernate. A creature who hibernates, for instance the hedgehog, will likely be ectothermic during hibernation, but more endothermic when active. In addition, sharks are ectothermic, but they can generate enough heat to be able to make their body temperature higher than the water they swim in. Lecture 5. Hello, I'm going to talk to you today about the Antarctic ozone hole. An ozone hole is caused by the thinning of the ozone layer due to human-made chemicals such as halons and chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, coupled with a colder climate. Since circa 1970, the ozone layer in Antarctica has been monitored by both the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. In 2020, the hole grew extremely quickly over a few months and grew to a size of 24 million square kilometres. Just 1 year earlier, the annual ozone hole was the smallest on record at 10 million square metres. Last year's unprecedented size, which was the largest since the monitoring began, was caused by a strong and cold polar vortex, which kept the temperature cold and prevented the ozone-depleted air mixing with ozone-rich air from higher latitudes. The hole eventually closed at the beginning of 2021, largely due to warmer temperatures, but NASA has warned that this does not signify that the atmospheric ozone is suddenly on a path to recovery. The Montreal Protocol Agreement has helped the ozone to recover, thanks to its ban on halocarbons. But we are unlikely to see a return to the ozone values of pre-1980 in Antarctica before the year 2060.